Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Letters to the show. That's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to talk about letters you have written us. Welcome, I'm Terry Smith, your host, to another episode of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on where you are on our planet, and whether you're listening to us live or to an archived version. We would like to wish you love and peace and neurological healing. So tonight we're going to, like I said, discuss all the things that you want to talk about. That's what this show does. We talk about what you bring to the table. We talk about anything neurological, brain trauma related, whatever you'd like to discuss, whatever you'd like to get opinions on or have on the table for topic, we will address. And tonight we've got a slew of letters that you've written us. If you'd like to call the show, the phone number is area code 424-243-9540. Once again, that's 424-243-9540. And if you'd like to speak once in queue, press 1 on your phone and we will try to get you on air as quickly as possible. There's quite a long list of callers tonight already on the switchboard, but unless you press 1, we will not hold you up too long. So tonight, we're going to get started right after a quick music break because we need to get some things in order here tonight. So we're going to rise to the occasion tonight. Cindy Cook. C-Y-N-D-I, Cook, C-O-O-K. Check her out on YouTube. This is Rise to the Occasion, Cindy Cook.
Bye.
Occasion. Welcome back. Again, I'm Terry Smith, your host, and we're off to another episode, February 22nd, 2024. Now, let's jump right in. We're going to address letters tonight or callers if you have a topic. I see one hand up on the switchboard. If you're new to the switchboard, press 1 if you'd like to speak on air. We're going to jump right in to area code 208 and find out what's on your mind. Area code 208, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. My name is Kate. Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you, Kate?
I'm good, and thank you for your kindness and patience. I made it. Glad to be here and grateful.
Well, good. We're glad to
have
you.
I don't know how long I have to talk, but I just I was born with high functioning autism and a tumor on the brain, and then 15 years ago I had a traumatic brain injury. And along with that, I've always had eye problems. And I don't know what to say except that I'm grateful to be here. And I'm trying to have a GoFundMe going, and I sent it to you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your GoFundMe? What is it that you're raising money to do?
Well, I'm in my late 60s, and I don't have family. And, you know, I've been reading in your website and a couple of others of people with TBIs and neurodivergent. I'm not certainly the only person in the world or woman in the world who's always been estranged from family, and I have been. So I've been alone in the world my whole life. And now I'm aging, and I've developed some serious vision problems. And I live in a Rocky Mountain state that is very, it's Montana, and it's not the TV show Yellowstone or Dances with Wolves. It's actually a very backward place without compassion or any concern for those who are without. There's just no concern. Everything here is about go away, and the favorite phrase in Montana is a doer on your own. Not like the old pioneers who would say, our neighbor's in trouble, how can we help? No, it's don't know what to tell you, doer on your own. And I moved here 4 years ago during the height of the medical pandemic, or I call it the medical emergency, when everything went upside down and people began to act very strangely toward others and shut their hearts to others. But I thought I had a network of people here and a community to join. It didn't turn out that way. I live in a place where you have to have a vehicle and be able to drive. And just to get eye care, I would have to go 400 miles from here to see a retina specialist.
400 miles?
Well, 400 to Missoula, 200 or 300 to Billings, couple hundred to Bozeman. There's no regular public transportation of any kind, except the train way up north on the border. There's just nothing. It's doer on your own. And fortunately, I have people praying for me, and I found out today that I do have serious eye problems. I finally got an honest diagnosis, but the wonderful doctor here isn't a specialist and can't treat it. So I still need to go very far away to get the treatment, hundreds of miles. In addition to that, I want to move home to my home state of Idaho. That's kind of the opposite. People sometimes think that Idaho is Iowa, and it's not. But the tendency among people to be loving-hearted and caring about others is very much like rural Iowa, or much of the Deep South is. Just how can we help you? What can we do? And I'm in a place where I'm getting older. I have visual problems. I cannot provide my own transportation. And there's really virtually no social services here at all. There's no, the laws do not protect renters. It's just a state that they even passed laws to make sure local firefighters couldn't get medical care at state expense. It's just that kind of place. And so I need to go home. That's what they GoFundMe. It's my friend that wrote it called it Refuge for Kate. And meaning to get back to my home state where I do have connections, I do know people, I know how to function in that state. With a head injury, I'm not well received in this culture. And as a person that's part Native, I'm not well received in this culture. And it's been very hard. And that's why there's a GoFundMe. Does that make sense?
I understand. So you went in Idaho. You do have family or friends who can assist you with
No, my family, I really was raised in a step family and couldn't have children. So I haven't had any living family for about 40 years. It's about 40 years since I had a living relative I could talk to. After my grandparents died, that was it. My mother's parents, after they died, that was it. No one else was ever going to exist. And I didn't get to know my father's family. I was not allowed to know them. They were mixed Native in Canada, and I didn't get to find them. So it's just been me alone. Always worked all my life, volunteered. I'm a veteran. I was an AmeriCorps volunteer. I was a missionary for a while. And I'm a writer. And with the one thing that wasn't ruined with the difficulties I was born with and the head injury, it didn't take my ability to write. And my heart's desire has always been to get a few books out that might make a difference in the world, because I am a good writer, and I have things to say. In the last year, I haven't been able to write because this eye problem came on me this year out of nowhere. And although I have a good doctor as of today, she can't treat me. I still have to travel really far to get the care, and I can't get there. I don't have $1,000 to take buses to Billings or Bozeman, and it's really too far to walk. I've actually been trying to figure out if I could walk that far to get to the eye care. I don't think I can walk that far. I'm 69. I probably can't. In Idaho, there are retina specialists in every community over 10,000 population, and wonderful doctors for other things, and social services, and a lot of compassion. And also the reservation that I was affiliated with as a Métis person is in Idaho. So I just want to go home. One okay. thing that I have run up against that probably pertains to everyone, maybe many others have had this happen, in dealing with this eye problem, I saw 10 eye doctors, and I was lied to. I was forced to take glaucoma drops during a visit, and I don't have glaucoma. The doctor said, you have high eye pressure, and if you go see a specialist, I don't want him to think badly of me. So open your eyes. Here comes the drops. And it was an open bottle that he had used on many other people. What?
Excuse me. A little cough. So the eye drops were in an open bottle.
An open bottle. Yes. He says, I use this on all my patients. Glaucoma eye drops, which are can be very dangerous. And he told me I was too old and that all the doctors in Montana agree I'm too old to even get the retinal care. Why bother, really? And
so
this is
the
kind of, this. What's that?
Well, does that mean that you think that Idaho will give you different results or different options medically? Surgically?
Yes, because I've lived there several times. And for one, it's the base of the culture in Idaho, even after COVID, is still LDS, which means extremely good doctors and dentists and chiropractors and surgeons, extremely well-trained with almost always very high ethics. In fact, I have a doctor in Idaho, an eye specialist in Idaho, who wants to try to help me remotely. And these 10 doctors here would not. I'm too old. I need to accept what they give me. In Montana, you take what we give you. If you want help, you take what you're given. Shut up. Don't say anything. You know, I was forced to go get an eye injection that the new doctor I saw today, just by a miracle, said, well, you didn't have that retinal occlusion. You have another condition that we're going to watch and treat, but you don't have what they all said. And so the eye injection I was given wasn't even supposed to happen. What happened is that my body went into full body spasms from it. I would never go back to him.
Wait, your body went into spasms from the eye drops?
This is a different eye doctor who used a very long syringe to give me a dangerous product called Eylea that's known to cause heart attacks and strokes because it's a very powerful steroid and it causes blood pressure spikes. And he refused to even monitor my blood pressure. And so I did get heart palpitations after it. By the time I got home, I couldn't move. Every muscle was in spasm. I don't know why, except that it was a poisonous concoction for my body. I'm not even making this up. I'm really not.
Did you find refuge in maybe malpractice? That doesn't sound as if it was planned.
I have experienced malpractice from 7 or 8 eye specialists in Montana in the last 14 months. But I have no money for attorneys. I'm very low income. So I wouldn't even know where to start.
Okay.
All I can do is to get out of a state where, because I have a head injury, I have been lied to, misrepresented, had 4 or 5 conflicting, all incorrect diagnoses, been ordered to shut up, forced to submit to those glaucoma eye drops, which were from a vial. He said, this is perfectly good. I've used them. I use them on all my patients. It's half empty. I've been using it on lots of people. I'm not making this up.
Oh, I don't believe that you are. I mean, your brain trauma, though, makes me think of the Brain Injury Association of America, and they usually have an office near you. So if you have a pencil or a pen, you can maybe write down the website or the address to contact
I've
them.
I've contacted them many times, and they told me to find a practitioner. Here in Montana, there aren't any people that work with TBI.
Okay,
There's no practitioners.
So then your primary objective then is to get more attention to your Refuge for Kate account for GoFundMe.
Well, I just wanted to be able to talk and have people hear me. You see, I'm a writer, and without the ability to write, my life is kind of over. That's why I live. That's what I live for. I haven't been able to read a computer screen since this, whatever this is, exactly hit my eyes in January of 2023. And now I have the best diagnosis I've had yet. I'm very happy, as I said, with this current woman. However, she's not a retina specialist, so she can't perform. She isn't licensed to do what ultimately needs to be done to save my eyes. And there aren't any retina specialists within several hundred miles of this town. So in Idaho, though, just in Boise alone, there are, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 retina specialist clinics just in that city alone. And that's where I'm trying to go. That's the most familiar part of Idaho to me. Boise
okay.
would be a good choice.
So you want to get you back to Idaho.
Idaho. And so I can't drive, so I can't drive a U-Haul. You know, I can't get myself or my things anywhere. And there isn't really anyone to drive me because there's no family. There's no husband. There's no children, no grandchildren, no siblings, nobody.
So
my mother was an only child, so there weren't any cousins on my mother's. She was an only child, so no cousins. And then the step family, I just, you know, had to walk away from that, as many neurodiverse people do, from a very abusive, very, very destructive set of people. And that just left me in the world without family, aging with head injuries that I feel they get worse with time. And now the visual problems that are getting very serious with time. And at some point I won't be able to work anymore. And there's no social services here either.
So wait, you're still working as of now?
I work with Easter Seals for the disabled, part-time, minimum wage, basically. And it's a decent job, and I'm grateful for it. And I can transfer. I can actually transfer that job to Idaho. I'd be in the program, and they would place me probably with the same host agency or someone else. So I would not be, you know, without work when I move, and I have a voucher for housing that will transfer. So it's just a matter, but what I can't do is come up with the cost of a move, moving some, I'll have to get rid of most of my things, but I can't drive. So if I could drive, I could just put everything in a U-Haul and get there, probably afford that, but I can't drive. And I can't afford a moving company.
Okay. Well, to answer your question, I think your original question was if we would publicize your GoFundMe page. Certainly we can put that on the Surviving Head Trauma Facebook page. We can certainly put that on our Surviving Head Trauma page on Facebook. So why don't you send us a copy of your link to the site, and we'll post it on Facebook on the Surviving Head Trauma page.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm that head injury. What did you say? I'm sorry.
We will post your link to the Refuge for Kate site on our Surviving Head Trauma page on Facebook.
Thank you.
I sent it to you
in messages, and I think I tried to post it on the Facebook page, but I don't know if it worked.
Okay, we get so much mail. I will personally go into the messages and look for your, in fact, I'll look on the computer, I'm here. Kathleen, is that you?
Yes.
Kathleen, okay, yeah, I have it. I will, after the show, post it on our page on Facebook.
Thank you. And I think that and I there's one person here helping me, and she may make one too, because the cost of moving is, you know, rental deposits, travel. It's not cheap to move anymore.
Okay. Well, I have you on the line with us. Would you mind sharing with us what happened to your head injury? How did that happen in your late year? You said recently.
The what? I'm sorry?
You said your brain injury happened recently in the last few years?
15 years ago.
15
yeah,
years ago?
So,
what happened?
Well, you know, and I think that, you know, listening to the show last night, that helped me place myself as not alone. I'm, you know, some things are so common to those, especially I think women, maybe even more so, can be very vulnerable with a TBI, with brain injury, right? Because we think differently, we move differently. I look vulnerable the way I move. You can see that I have a head injury when people look at me. And it changed the way my eyes sit in my face. It changed how I move and how I speak. And sometimes I slur, and it just, you know, it brings this vulnerable energy. And I know from reading that a lot of women with TBI can be victims of sexual assault or abuse in relationships, just be victimized, taken advantage of. And I had a man who was really a predator. I got involved with him, and I had to flee. I had to leave my home, and I wound up homeless, living in a van. And I was trying to live in the van in the winter, trying to drive it. It was too big for me. It was hard for me to drive. I had no one to help me then either. And I couldn't find anywhere to rent. No one understood TBI. I was born with brain injury, so I already was in the barrel of the gun. I'd had a hard life. And I was driving this van to go to this man's farm to get a heater fixed so I could live in my van. And an impaired driver came up behind me on a country road. They were clocked at doing about 80 miles an hour and smashed into the back of my van, pushed me into a farm field, and my van went rocketing into a rock wall, and I hit my head on the side of the van from that impact. You know, I was flung into the window on the side of the van. And when I came to, I was laying on the ground, and my van was just, you know, smoke coming out of the hood, and I was laying on the ground, and I did not have any idea who I was. I had a very severe concussion with all the symptoms that go with a severe head injury, you know, the nausea and amnesia and a huge swelling on the side of my head. And I was taken to an emergency room, and then they just let me go and said, well, just, you know, go to the shelter. You don't have anywhere to live now. And I was never medically treated. I've never had medical treatment. I never had therapy for it. But I don't know why I'm still alive. It took me for about 3 or 4 months. I couldn't even read or write my name. I just had to get through it. And it just was an untreated, never medically well-diagnosed. You know, there's certainly notes that talk about severe head injury, but they just let me go. And I never had help then either. Does that make sense? I know it doesn't make sense.
No, Kate, it does. Actually, I'm 39 and a half years. In June, it'll be 40 years. Of dealing with my own personal brain trauma and also the stories I've heard for the past 40 years. So your story is not that unusual. People sustaining a brain injury and not being properly treated or the symptoms not manifesting so immediately that they go without proper diagnosis even. So it's not unheard of that your story fits into that group of people who go misdiagnosed or undiagnosed. So I guess the most important thing for you is to feel a sense of home. So getting you to Idaho sounds like a good idea. I mean, being alone is no heavenly place for anyone under any circumstance, I guess, but especially with your early autism, your high-level autism and the brain trauma combined at 69 years old, we certainly wish you the best, and there's some hope. As long as you have hope, there's a way, and it sounds as if you are hopeful. You're reaching out. That's a good sign. A good example of hope is when you reach out for help. So we will certainly put your post up on Surviving Head Trauma page.
Thank you. And you found my note. So please do put it up. And when the one lady here that said she'd do that one, a small one for me, I'll send that too, if I may. And I guess I'd like to ask, is there any way that I can network with a group, or do you through the show, or and once I get to Boise, if I can get there, they now have brain specialists and TBI specialists and really good veteran services and Idaho brain injury groups and practitioners. And so you see, there's a lot there in Boise that I need. I know I can't be alone as I get into my 70s facing all this. It's
okay.
A special kind of hell.
Well,
and I can't live where there's no transportation to medical care. I mean, that's insanity.
Okay.
I can't do that. I can't walk 400 miles. You know, I need to be in a place that the larger city where there might be some compassion and social services, I hope. And I know the area well, too. It's very familiar to me.
Well, you have a plan, and your plan sounds like a solid one. So it's a matter of just making it happen. And it sounds as if you've started the process. It's a matter of you now getting the publicity you need to actually grow the account. What's the dollar amount that you're trying to achieve?
What's that? I'm sorry?
What's the dollar amount? What's your goal for fundraising?
I think it was maybe unrealistic, but the man, Andrew, who created the GoFundMe, he had a cap of $20,000. He thought that would be enough to get me to medical care first while I'm waiting. You know, I have to transfer my voucher, you know, and then get me to Idaho and housing deposit and set up and have a cushion to live on. He thought that would be reasonable. I think that's about what it would take.
Okay. Well,
that might be too much to ask, but I'd be grateful for any help.
Well, it's a matter of the right person finding it, and you never know who that person might be, or a listener who's tuning in to tonight's live show or listening later to an archived show. We will direct everyone to Surviving Head Trauma page on Facebook to find your GoFundMe account, Refuge for Kate. So I just wish you the best, and we would certainly take an honor to put your post up on our page.
Wow. Well, that's thank you. And I'm working with my boss to transfer to Idaho, to transfer the job. I'm not asking people to support me ongoing. I know that I can transfer the Section 8 voucher. I know I can transfer my job. But it's like I say, I can't I'd have to hire people to drive the U-Haul or something. You know, I don't even know how that's going to happen. But somehow, I'm just going to believe, and I thank you for saying it's an honor. I feel honored to be allowed to talk tonight, sending love to everyone else. I know that my story's not that unusual, and I just send my compassion to everyone else who's lived their own challenge. And I just have to say that maybe the greatest injustice is the whole thing of that if you're not, a person's not really ever diagnosed, then going down the road, there's not a lot of help because most, you know, when you go for help, people don't believe it. People don't believe it. Oh, yeah, you're not head injured. You can talk. I can talk, but I'll probably fall down before I get out of the office. Or I'll bump into the walls on my way out, you know, or not remember where the door is, right?
We can relate to that. We do understand.
You know, or whatever, you know, or drop about 8 things before I get 2 feet, you know, and all of these things that I laugh at myself to stay sane and try to make it funny sometimes, but it's not funny for any of us.
Well, you know,
and the lack of...
Well, you just tapped on a key point. You just tapped on a key point, and that's a sense of humor. So it's often hard to find, but when you can laugh, that does help. So laughter is one of the best medicines through this journey of ours on traumatic brain trauma injury. So it's now just a matter of getting you to Idaho, and hopefully we can do that. And I ask that you keep us informed. Let us know how the process is developing.
Oh, if I may, I certainly will. And, you know, one last thing I just want, and most of you probably know this, but and I don't get full benefits. You know, a lot of veterans don't get any benefits. That's not unusual. But I have a particular heart-mending heart for the veterans with TBI and just about everybody that comes home from being in a combat zone. Now has traumatic brain injury. Almost all of them, almost all veterans now do, because of the concussive force of the explosions. It was bad enough when it was PTSD, but there's also the TBI component among almost every veteran I've met that's been in country. So
yes.
Keep your hearts toward them too.
Yes, we certainly do. Which branch were you serving?
An Air Force. I was
Air Force. Well, thank you for your service to our country.
And we
will certainly post
your...
I was in
public affairs. I was a journalist, ironically.
Yeah. Ah, then you know how to maneuver the publicity part then with social media. Are you fluent
somewhat.
With social media?
Yes, somewhat. Although
somewhat.
I can't see very well to do it anymore. But I do have my friend doing the GoFundMe for me.
Excellent. All right, Kate. Well, I want to thank you for calling us tonight and sharing your story and letting us talk with you and getting your voice heard, because sometimes being heard is more beneficial than people realize. Sometimes we just need to be heard, know that people understand us and what we're going through.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think this is probably the first time I've really felt heard in 15 years. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's encouraging. It gives us more motivation to continue what we're doing, because it's voices like yours that need a vehicle of to facilitate your journey and what you're going through, so that you're not an invisible part of this injury. It's a reality of ours.
If you're not heard, I mean, I have been particularly isolated because I had no community. No TBI community all these years. So, wow.
Okay. All right. Well, then we look forward to hearing positive results from this call, this connection that we've made. So please, on the page. Yes, please. Keep us informed. Okay.
And
we wish you the best.
You found my message, so you'll be able to post that, right? I'm being very redundant.
Yes. I did. It's from your B, Kathleen Llewellyn.
Big Kathleen Llewellyn, my mother's family name. Little Wolf, my father's
Little Wolf.
Name.
Okay.
I do have his. I took his name because I finally found out his name. I just never got to meet the family, but I do have his name, Little Wolf.
Okay.
So Métis from Misha Cree Métis from British Columbia is where he was from. And his people were originally from the Alberta, Manitoba prairies. And then there's a Métis colony in British Columbia that has to do with Hudson Bay history, the Hudson Bay Company. That's a long story. But Métis, depending on which side of the border you're on.
I see it here. It's a matter of now just posting it on the page, which we'll do after this episode ends
and
tonight.
I don't know if I sent you my email address, but if anybody wanted to contact me otherwise, do you want me to give that? Would that be?
Certainly. Sure. What's your email address?
I'll just give it. I'm going to give it to you in military numerics. alphanumerics, so because it's a hard email to understand.
All right.
So here we go, in military alphanumerics. It's Elwha Wolf is how it sounds. So it's Echo, Lima, or Lemon, whichever you want to say, E-L, Whiskey, Hotel, Alpha, Whiskey, Oscar, Lima, Foxtrot, Elwha Wolf.
Okay. ELWHAWOLF. And it's
at yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com.
.com.
Okay. Well, I have that recorded here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kate, and God bless you too. And we hope to hear from you with positive results from this connection we've made.
I will let you know how things are happening, and I know that this connection right here, and also if anybody can send me information about how to connect with any kind of TBI community here in Montana or even in Idaho, something I might not know about, because I do need that too in real
life.
Have you
tried various groups on Facebook? Because there are quite a few specific groups in different parts of the country.
I'm in yours, thank God, and then I found one called No-Nonsense Neurodivergent because of the autism, so that's kind of that community. And a couple others that have been helpful, and that's just kind of saved my life, just being able to connect it all online.
All right. Okay.
That we all had more chat groups. I wish that we had Zooms and chat groups and, you know.
Well, if you keep searching, you will find something. I said, if you keep searching, there's something I'm sure that you may just have to discover yet. Because, I mean, Brain Injury Association of America, I'm surprised, does not have something near you in Montana. But maybe in Idaho, when you get there, you'll find some assistance from them.
It's starting to be in Boise, and I think maybe Coeur d'Alene, maybe the larger cities. But it's just Montana. Don't any of you move here. Don't ever come to Montana. I really, it's been very difficult. There are some good people here, but even connecting with native cousins here has been very difficult. It's just not a place. It's the wrong place for people vulnerable.
Which city are you in Montana?
Oh, I'm in Great Falls.
Great Falls. Okay. Great Falls, Montana. Well, Kate, I think we have enough to work with here to get you started on our Surviving Head Trauma page, and we certainly look forward to hearing from you, okay?
Thank you so much. Bless you all. Sending everybody love, sending you love. And
yes, we send you positive love and energy. Yes, we do. We do appreciate you calling and sharing your story with us. So that we thank you
just,
for calling.
Hang up on me, I guess, and we'll listen for the next person.
Yes. Thank you so much, and bless you.
Thank you. Bless
you. All right. Good night. Good night, Kate.
Good night.
Well, it's certainly nice to know that there's a voice for us. And with that in mind, we'd like to certainly thank Craig Cecilia, our network owner, and Kim Justice, our network manager, to make this possible, to make this network possible for us to have listeners like Kate contact us and share her story. So we will certainly put her GoFundMe page account on our Surviving Head Trauma page on Facebook. And you can find us there every day on Facebook to see something uplifting, educational, or just informative with something about life and living with brain trauma or some type of life stress and trauma. So Kate, we certainly appreciate you calling and sharing your story with us. And if you'd like to reach us, you may call us, area code 424. The number is 243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And once you get in queue on the switchboard, you press 1 and we'll bring you on air. So our next caller is calling from area code 972 and we will bring you on air. Area code 972, you're live.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
This is Jackie.
Hi.
Yeah.
Jackie Rockwell.
Yeah, that's me.
Welcome to the show. I've read your letters.
Thank you.
Surviving head trauma.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm like one of your top fans.
I certainly see you a lot.
A lot of things. Yeah.
Well, what's going on with tonight? What can we discuss that is of interest tonight for you?
Well, I don't know. I'm just here because I was invited. I didn't know you guys had a radio station here, a radio program. It just someone sent me an invite last night or the night before. I think I expressed most recently that I had been approved my SSDI after nearly 3 years, 2 appeals or 2 denials, and then I had to get a lawyer, and it's been approved. But
Well, is your SSI from brain trauma? Did you have a head injury?
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
And
what happened?
Yeah, so I'm also a veteran, so I was listening to Miss Kate talk about its seemingly lack of resources, and I thought, didn't she say she was a veteran, and there should be a lot more resources for her as a veteran for any and all of that she was mentioning. I'm a veteran, and I don't have my head injury is not service related. But my treatment is with the VA. So
how did your brain injury happen? What happened?
Oh, 2019 July. It was hot. I was sitting in my car waiting for a grocery delivery at the grocery store. I got out of my car to help them put the groceries in my back seat, and I passed out and my head hit the concrete really hard. And that was that. And I ended up losing my job, and it's just been a nightmare ever since. So I wasn't in a car crash. Nobody beat me up. It was just a simple fainting and my head hit the concrete.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
You did say something that a lot of our callers and people who visit the page have an awful hard time getting, and that's the SSI.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Can you maybe help or explain to our audience what you did to get your approval?
Well, as I just mentioned, I finally resorted to an attorney after 2 denials. I have a social worker that I was using with the VA that we applied twice, and, you know, the answer was no. I was getting – so I ended up losing my job as a result of the head injury just because my functionality was just different, drastically different. And – because I'm a veteran, I went to the VA, I got a social worker, I had my primary care, and everybody was, you know, to assist me in improving or whatever it is that happens to head injury patients at the VA. And it didn't happen overnight. I have been advocating since 2019, and it seems like the fourth year, the beginning of 2023 was when things started to change for the better for me, because I was advocating for myself differently, to the point where I was going to the executive office at the VA itself, the Dallas VA, and I was going to the patient advocate office at the Dallas VA.
I refuse to, you know, and I'm thinking, and I would tell them, listen, you guys are brain trauma specialists. And I don't have the worst injury you've ever seen, and I'm a veteran. So you guys need to hold hands and make this make sense to me. And so after I did that, threatened to write congressional letters, and I was consistently self-advocating. I switched from one primary care doctor to another. I've gone through, in the last 4 years, probably 6 primary care doctors just to get to the one who was going to listen to me. And so at that point, year 3 or 4, I was seeing a neurologist, and they were testing me and doing all sorts of things, and mental health. Okay, that's very important. So I think what happened is documenting the injury by consistently showing up and advocating for yourself, because even my family members, you know, didn't believe me. My employer didn't believe me. They would, you know, literally, you know, threaten to fire me. They would write me up. And basically the first 4 months, I was going to work, couldn't drive anymore, so I was taking Ubers to work. I'd show up to work and leave by ambulance or leave early, had to get accommodation letters. So I guess what happens is when, if you're working when you have a head injury and it's a non-work-related injury, you're pretty much on your own. And documenting and getting a lawyer.
So you think the attorney is what made the difference for you, actually getting a legal representation?
A Social Security disability lawyer, right.
Specifically one for Social Security.
Exactly. And it's taken over a year for them to file the appeal, get all of my medical records and all of that. And every time I changed medications or some medicine didn't work for me, it's documented. Every time I had an injury, or something happened, I would let my attorney know, and they were documenting. And so I think the documentation that you do have a legitimate injury and how it has affected your life, and then they'll have someone from the Workforce Commission or whatever, at least in Texas where I am, phone with me and my lawyer and the judge, and that person asks me some questions and determine that with the injury that I have, what other work can I do? And it was determined that, nope, I can't do what I've trained to do in my normal work. I can't, there's nothing else I can do, even if I was to change occupation. So you have to document and self-advocate. There are some people I know go to work. I went to work until I got fired, pretty much, you know. And I only exacerbated my condition by attempting to go to work when my brain should have been resting in the first place. So just knowing that I had, you know, I wasn't in a crash, or I didn't have any physical brain damage. I had all of the scans and the assessments and all of that, and there's no physical to my brain. I had a huge contusion, and I still have nerve pain to this day. I have trigeminal neuralgia that's associated with my TBI, and I realized that I had nerve damage the moment the paramedics woke me up off the concrete. You know, it's like I had this pain on the right side of my face. And so I constantly complained about it. I was fainting all of the time. And so documenting is really crucial, and finding a provider that believes you. And I think that's a huge factor, not giving up, especially if you know you can't go to work.
Okay. Well, Jackie, I have a question for you. Let me ask you this. When you said that you were documenting it, with the doctors you were seeing, were they your own personal physicians, or were these doctors appointed to you by Social Security?
No, these were my VA doctors that I had before the head injury. So I was a VA patient before then.
Okay.
I have apparently, as it's turned out, that I have what they call fainting spells. And so I had a series of, you know, months, for like 6 to 9 months or so, I had vertigo. There was no explanation, and it hit me really hard all at once. And I was, you know, so I had to quit my job. I was a student, put my furniture in storage, and move in with my mother, pretty much, because of vertigo. And so that was, vertigo is a symptom, okay, of something. But it hit me really hard for a very long time, and so it led to these fainting spells, which is why I fainted. They thought it was a heat-related fainting spell, and part of it, that's true, because it was 102 degrees that day in Dallas, and I had very little exposure to it, but I fainted and hit my head. So I went through the VA, you know, a battery of tests, heart monitoring, all kinds of things to rule out what was the cause of the fainting. They sort of disregarded the head injury, and that was part of my self-advocating. It's like, listen, I get it. We're trying to figure out why I fainted. However, I have a head injury. That's for real. That is real. It's affecting my life. And so I never let up on that. I never let up on that. And so the TBI is the biggest factor. I have a better idea of how to keep myself from fainting. I do know when it's coming on. I have symptoms. I have flare-ups and all sorts of things that happen. But the TBI, the nerve damage, the pain in my brain, on my scalp from when my head hit the plate, all of that still happens to me to this day, and it's almost 5 years into life. So, and that was because I'm a VA patient that I was able to go in and out of the, you know, medical system, you know, because I was already in the VA medical system. And going to different emergency rooms from wherever I was, it seemed to me that nobody had any solutions for a patient with a mild. Mine was declared mild TBI, and then I was told it was post concussion syndrome. And when I, you know, was consistently complaining about the pain flare-ups on the right side of my face, they called it trigeminal neuralgia. And so with all of that documentation, when I finally had to get an attorney to file for Social Security disability, it was all in the record in the VA system and the emergency rooms that I'd been to. My mental health team, all of it was documented.
Okay. And you said the entire process from beginning to actually being accepted took about a year?
Well, the appeal. So the appeal with the attorney has been a little bit over a year. It was, yeah. So before then, I had a social worker at the VA who, together, she and I would submit my applications for benefits to the Social Security, twice denied, with just the two of us submitting and documenting, and letters from my doctors and my psychiatrist and everybody. I forget who else. But so after that second denial, then my social worker, you know, she said, maybe you should consider an attorney, and I found one. And I just got my approval last week, the letter and the emails from the Social Security Administration.
So what did the attorney do that you were unable to do? Was it just because you were represented by counsel that you were approved, you think? Or is it something that he did you had not done?
Yeah, I think Social Security attorneys, they have expertise in verbiage. She coached me because I had to ultimately talk to a judge, okay? It wasn't in person. It was over the phone. And, you know, how attorneys will coach you. Stick to the facts. Don't answer any questions they don't ask. And the judge asked me a lot of questions. And then there was a question and answer period with my attorney. But, prior to the time, that was the actual hearing. So there's the attorneys and submitting the appeal of the decision, the denial, in whatever format they do that. I think it takes more than just a letter, but it's the attorney actually advocating for you as the patient, saying, listen, you know, she's got all of this stuff happening and she's not able to go to work, and here's some things that explain this to, you know, the Social Security, Texas, the state of Texas had me seeing a psychiatrist. So I spent a four-hour session on the phone with a psychiatrist from Houston. I went actually into a doctor's office and had a physical exam, and they did x-rays and all of that stuff, brain scans. And so in the end, so the attorney, yeah, they have skill sets to, you know, jump over hurdles that an average, just a lay person, can't. And so she got me in front of a judge, and then the judge made the decision along with that workforce person, saying, listen, based on all this information, all of the documentation, she's definitely not going to be able to go back to her work or do that type of work anymore. And, you know, they're not going to go make me be a bricklayer skills. You know, I don't have, you know, fast food restaurant skills. You know, so they're not going to subject you to, okay, get a job anyway. Because my expertise and my training and my background would require me to use computers, be online, and be in high pressure environment with lots of people and activity and lights and all of that and phones, which I just can't go back to. I was high functioning and now I'm not.
So is that the criteria that Social Security uses, not trying to place you in just employment, but if they try to, if you're not able to return to what you did at that same level, then you are qualified for SSDI?
Well, I'm not sure if that's the only factor, but it's a huge part of it. So once the judge sees all of the evidence that the attorney says, listen, she's had all of these exams, these are all the medicines she's taken, every single medication that I've taken, every pill that I couldn't tolerate, you know, every time my blood pressure changed, I had an 11-month spike in my blood glucose where it was nearly 500. I was giving myself insulin for nearly a year. So all of those factor in, you know, whatever your body goes through, whatever your mind, emotions go through during your TBI is telling a judge that, you know, you've had some trauma and you can't recover from it and you're not well. And going and looking for a job that you've had in the past or finding something new to do is not going to make any difference. She's not going to be able to function. She's not going to be able to commute. So the attorney was there to prove that to the judge. And she did a better job at it than I did it for myself.
Okay. Now, Jackie, a lot of the questions I'm asking you is really for our audience who may be going through something like this. How does that work with Social Security attorneys? Do they get a portion of your award, or how do they get paid?
Yeah. So I don't know about other states. The state of Texas, there is a ceiling, a cap on what the attorney can get, you know, from your benefits award. Okay, so I think in the state of Texas, the maximum they can get, no matter what your award is $7,500. Okay, so whatever you get awarded, you'll get an award letter, and it'll tell you what your benefit amount is, when it starts, and how, and if it's retroactive. So mine was retroactive to the last day that I worked in 2019, which is November 19th. So from the time of my injury in July to November 19th, I was working. And then after November 19th, you know, we all agree that I was done. I'm not going to come in and try to, you know, be nice to you people. And, you know, they put me through a lot, company. And it was to my detriment every single time I showed up for work. And so it finally registered with me. And I had the emergency room doctor tell me, it'll get worse before it gets better. That's the most information that I got from any medical professional after I hit my head. And so, and that doctor was not a VA emergency room doctor. That was at a Methodist hospital in Dallas. So, I would show up to work a day or two, leave early, end up going to an ER or whatever because I passed out or something. And then it became very clear to me that, you know, they would call me and leave threatening messages and yell at me when I show up and write me up formally. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to help you out, and I'm not getting any better, so I quit. And so Social Security went back to the day that my last day on the job. That's when my benefits will pay retroactively.
Okay.
And
so out of that award,
explains what,
you pay your attorney from the retroactive amount, because I'm sure it adds up, and that's how the attorney gets...
Well, yeah, but it's capped. It's capped. She's not going to get more than $7,500 of it. That's my understanding in the state of Texas. But I will get a letter from the Social Security Administration saying this is what her fee is, and we're going to deduct it and pay it to her. I don't think I have to deliver a payment to her.
Oh,
the
they
Social
pay
Social Security Administration.
Directly.
Yeah, that's why I think it works. In Texas, yeah. It's very strict. I think there must have been some abuse at some point where attorneys would, you know, get, you know, benefits for people and then basically take most of the back pay. And so I think in Texas, I don't know about other states, but I know in Texas there is a ceiling on how much an attorney can get.
Is that how that works? It varies state to state. Social Security being a national entity, it's not the same everywhere then. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think, my understanding is there's a ceiling on what in Texas.
So each state has its own rules?
About what the attorney can... Yeah, the attorney's fee will be. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, it sounds as if you collected quite a bit of information, a wealth of knowledge from this experience. In hindsight now, is there any advice you could give our audience to if they were just starting to shorten their time of being approved, that you might give them to shorten it?
So when the attorney that I selected came recommended to me by others who had experience with her for their own benefit. So other people had injuries and they needed to file for this benefit. She came recommended that way. Not everybody was head injury patient. So And they told me, I was told that she works very fast. And I think my expectation that it was going to be, you know, 90 days or something like that, but it took an entire year for me. And I think a big part of it is the backlog because of COVID. And so she made it very clear to me that it wasn't going to be a fast process, that it could be months. And so I don't know. So I guess that's different in every state or every county or whatever, based on how many, you know, claims are filed.
The backlog or the waiting.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, would you think maybe starting with an attorney would be a better route, or do you have to do it yourself at first and be denied before you are allowed counsel?
No, I think if I had known better, I probably would have started with the attorney. Not to say that it would have, you know, come faster. Maybe it would have. I don't know. But I just know that my first two applications for the benefit were denied. And I had a social worker, and we gathered all the information. And the state of Texas, you know, dictated to me, okay, we want proof of your disability that you're claiming. And so they told me where to go for my physical exam. And they told a psychiatrist who was in Houston, actually, to call me, and we talked about my injury. So they will, at least in Texas, they provided, you know, and I went and got x-rays, you know, for them at their expense. I didn't have to do all of that on my own. And it was outside of the VA that they sent me. It was their, you know, they selected these people. But I also had my documentation from the VA because I am a VA patient, okay, already. From my visits to the VA, all of my medications, all of my lab work, and how drastically my health changed post concussion.
So documentation is vital.
Yes, I think so. Documentation is vital. My psychiatrist wrote a letter for me, my own psychiatrist, because I have a mental health provider within my VA healthcare team, documenting the medicines that you take that work, documenting the medicines that you've taken that didn't work, and the side effects of all of it. Document, document, document.
Okay. Which branch were you a member?
I was in the Navy.
Navy. Well, thank you for your service to our country. Okay, so I'm reading your note to us from your direct message for surviving head trauma, and you say that you're in a caregiver mode too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not quite sure that I understand that. So are you caring for someone else?
Mm-hmm. My mother. Mm-hmm.
What kind
of... Excruciating.
It's what?
It's excruciating.
It's excruciating. So it's difficult because of the... brain trauma and her condition,
that's
I'm sure.
That's a huge part of it, and her condition, yeah. So and because she's my mother, and when you're watching your parents age and medically suffer from pain and all sorts of things, and then I have, you know, how do you prioritize yourself? And so it's a daily struggle, and my mother's condition is early onset dementia, and I spend the majority of my day just, you know, in caretaker mode for her, you know, her needs, her medications, her care team, housework, and all of that, and then myself.
So your issue is multifaceted then. I mean, you're dealing with your own trauma issues and the trauma of watching your mother decline like this.
Exactly.
And taking care of her at the same time. Well, you're you're to be applauded for all that you're going through and have been through. So
it's excruciating.
Okay. Well, is there anything you'd like to share with our audience to maybe help someone else who might be going through something similar, as far as being a dealing with their own medical issues as well as taking care of others around them, that might encourage them to keep going and hang in there?
Well, one thing I think, I was talking to a friend last night, and we were mommy bloggers back in the day. We both, you know, my daughter's 30, so we've been kind of online in the blogosphere since way back at the advent of the internet, right? And so she's got health issues, and so we're kind of tag team, and we have different faiths, but we always say keep the faith. So whatever your faith is, don't, you know, it counts, okay? So having faith counts. Because when you see, like in my case, myself advocating and so I understand you're a TBI patient as well, or survivor.
Yes.
I like to say patient. So you know what that feels like. And so I don't have to explain it to you, but I constantly have to explain to people. My mother's medical team, she's got PT and occupational therapists and nurses in and out, social workers, just for her care, in and out. I had to put up a whiteboard, you know, a dry erase board to keep track of all the people coming in and out, and then I have to, like, put my Navy hat on and say, listen, this is how this is going to be done. You don't come with credentials. You don't come with the mask. You don't get in. And I get people upset with me about that. I'm like, sorry, I'm running a tight ship. And so that's the other thing is if you've got an ounce of leadership in you just to take care of yourself, you know, just play that card with people. I never fail to tell anybody that I'm talking to on the phone, listen, I have a TBI. I have traumatic brain injury. I have a head injury. I'm from Texas. I talk slow. I hear slow. I have to process. You know, so I find myself advocating for myself that way, and I have told people, if you want to communicate with me, we've got to do this in a way that works for me. Okay, because if I don't understand you, we're not communicating. So self-advocacy, okay, and I know that not everybody's like me, but I would say to people, self-advocacy, okay, drink lots of water, eat clean, keep the faith. I mean, that's the best we can do. That's the least we can do. Because
I really
need strength. Yeah.
Well, what you just said, though, I think is compelling. I mean, that's really a good point you just made, and that was letting people know from the beginning that you have issues, and the communication is more effective, I think, when they understand your perimeters of what you're capable of and what you're not capable of dealing with in the conversation and to comprehend it and to digest it. So speaking up for yourself, self-advocacy.
Exactly. It's hard, but then once you do it a couple of times, I mean, try with a sibling, because my brothers, you know, they're glad that I'm here with our mother, you know, so they can do their lives. But I'm like, when you come here, this is how it is, you know. And I do that with Spectrum customer service, Atmos Energy customer service, Amazon, whenever I call, Walmart delivery customer service. I have to say, listen, I have a TBI. Can you repeat that slowly? And if they repeat it and it's not slow enough for me, I have to process it. And so a lot of people that come here now, they know the rules. And that makes life so much sweeter.
Well, Jackie, I'm glad you said that, because, well, you know, because a lot of survivors, patients, if you will, tend to want to hide or minimize their issues as much as possible so that they don't feel as if they're standing out or abnormal. And that's maybe not the healthiest way, because you don't get the full attention that you need or treat it as you should be.
Yeah, and I see that, and I've seen that, like, on the Facebook groups. I don't know, more so on the page that you have, Surviving Brain Trauma, but I am in other groups, and sometimes people are, people in the brain trauma head injury community, the survivors of it, the patients, it seems to me that they want the pain to go away. They want their old lives back, but they're not advocating for that. And I don't want my old life back, because that means I'd have to go back to that company. If I wanted my old life back, I'd have to go back to that company or working for somebody else, and that's never going to happen. I've decided if my brain healed tomorrow, I am not going back into the corporate workforce. That's just not something I'm going to do. And so I'm glad, and so this has enabled me to be here for my mother. It's enabled me to figure out another way to earn income, outside of my disability benefits, okay? And so, and still advocating and speaking to other injured people, because now I know something I didn't know before this injury, that this is hard. This is hard. And some of us, I was afraid. When I realized my mother was in decline, I'm like, okay, Jackie, it's me and her. Me and my mom. One of us has got to be stronger. It's going to be me. And I was regretful, resentful in the beginning that I've got two brothers and nobody's here but me. So I just, in some part of me had to agree or to pretend like, okay, this is like when you were in the Navy. You got shit to do. Get up and do
it. Take
care
of it. Yes.
Yeah, and then I take my pills. I found the supplements that work for me. I drink a lot of water. I keep myself hydrated. And I eat clean, and then there are days when I will eat 4 bags of Reese's peanut butter cups, and so it's like you give and take, but then you decide, okay, it's on me. And so self-advocacy, I don't dare let somebody take for granted, where I am.
Okay. Now, as far as your Social Security disability payment, are you allowed to work and earn income with that award, or is there a restriction on the amount you're allowed to earn?
I think there's a restriction, but I'm going to figure it out. And so if I get to the point where I'm earning more than they're paying me in benefits, I will gladly give up the benefits. I would gladly give up it for life if I can get myself to the point where I'm earning, in the way that I want to earn to sustain the lifestyle that I want or achieve it, because I don't have it now. I don't have the lifestyle that I had before my injury, okay? And I want it back. I want it back. And so for now, Social Security benefits will help, okay? I also have a VA disability. And I would gladly give all of that back if I can manage to earn more than those two benefit payouts combined, and I can sustain it for the rest of my life. So that's what I'm working towards. It's hard to do. It is extremely, hard to do, because, that kind of effort in any kind of work or, artistic endeavor or whatever requires focus that a TBI patient normally doesn't have. I don't have that kind of focus, but I struggle to achieve that. I actually had that conversation with the Social Security judge. She asked me if I had a social media presence, and I'm like, yeah, I do. And she asked me what it was about. And I told her, I told her I had bought some courses, and I tried to complete my art degree online, and I couldn't. I wasted all of my VA benefits taking these courses, in 2019 during COVID, and I couldn't complete the course because, you know, technical things was very hard to process, and there's timed tests and things have to be turned in at a certain time, even when the classes are online. Some of the apps that I had to use were extremely hard for me to navigate as a TBI patient, and they were very accommodating. They gave me lots of time, but I still had to turn in the work and get the grade. And so I feel like I wasted my veterans education benefits because I didn't get the grade and I couldn't complete the program. So I let her know that. And that's another thing to document. If you're trying to do something to be employed and earn money and it doesn't work and you try something else, it doesn't work, document that and tell it to the judge. Tell it to your lawyers so the lawyer can tell it to the judge. I try. I'm trying to do things to sustain my life, to eat like I normally eat, you know.
Okay. When you say clean eating, my first thought is fruits and vegetables, not processed food, fast food, or
exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Well, Jackie, you're quite a wealth of information tonight, and we certainly applaud you on all that you're doing and going through of your own and for your mother. So we mm-hmm. wish you the best of her outcome, and also for you to find the joy that it sounds if you want to achieve, and that's self-sufficient income. And mm-hmm. if you keep working as hard as you've worked on everything else you've described tonight, I'm sure that there's no way you won't find it. You will find it.
Yeah.
So we encourage you to keep the diligent that you've applied so far. And like I told Kate, our last caller,
mm-hmm.
please keep
mm-hmm.
in touch with us. Let us know how you're progressing on Surviving Head Trauma
mm-hmm.
page. We can always contact us and let us know how you're doing. And if there's anything we can do to help you in your journey.
Wonderful. And what can I do to help you guys? Because I'm, you know, I'm on your page. It's usually when I, you know, open up my phone and I see you're probably in my feed first and foremost. And so I'm often delighted to see the posts, even the ones that are humorous, and I can engage and say, yeah, you're right, that's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
And that's perfect, because we struggle just to sit up and, you know, just to sit up.
Well, you know, Jackie, it's funny. Yeah, and it's funny because people who have not endured what we've been through with head trauma, and you, even though yours is mild, mm-hmm. there are consequences and results that people who've not had that head trauma can't comprehend. It's incomprehensible. It's inconceivably something that you can't wrap your head around it, because it's something you have to experience to understand and grasp. So you're certainly talking to the audience who understands what you're
mm-hmm.
describing and can relate to everything you're saying, and especially the humor part. If you can find something,
mm-hmm.
something to smile or laugh about in all of this turmoil, that's a blessing,
mm-hmm.
I think, because there are moments that we need that break from the harsh reality of our circumstance. So we'd like to thank you so much for calling
thank
and
you.
Joining us and sharing your experience. I mean, I've talked with so many people who want to go down the Social Security route, but you're the first one I've actually talked with who was successful at being awarded, because most people give up and quit after their first denial.
Yeah, and so and that's the easy thing. That's the easy thing to do. But you're entitled to it, and if you have to fight for it, okay, call Jackie. Call me if you need some encouragement to. You know, and an advocate, I'm it. I don't charge for that. You know, it's, you know, because I know not everybody else, not everybody's like me. And so if you need an advocate, DM me. If you need some encouragement, and it's like, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. Sometimes it's exhausting, because I actually have felt that way. And when I would go to the VA and I'd find that I'm not getting the support that I need from that doctor, I'd make a beeline to the patient advocate office. I'd make another beeline to the office where they keep a list of all of the doctors in the hospital. And I'm like, okay, tell me about this one. Tell me about that one. Yeah, I want him next. You know, until I get to the doctor that's listening to me, not just want to prescribe me pills. And sometimes I would go to the high office, the executive office, and I'd sit there, and then I'd end up talking to somebody in there about, listen, you know, and I'd say, listen, and I wouldn't be ashamed to do that. I would put on my veteran hat, woman veteran hat, black woman veteran hat, whatever card I had to play, I'd play it. So that's what I say to people, play the card.
Hang in there.
Play
Don't
the
quit
card.
After that first denial.
So,
okay.
Because being this kind of sick, okay, I never would have thought in a bazillion years I'd hit my head on concrete. I still remember the sound of it. And I know there are people in and out of the VAs all over this country. And I know a lot of your listeners and a lot of the followers on your page, they are worse injured than I am. And I will stand in the gap for anybody who wants me to. I will help you write the letter, make the phone call.
Have you thought about maybe starting your own page on one of the social media platforms to put yourself out there?
Yeah, I started, and I actually have, I have an Instagram, and it's kind of rolling on slowly, and I'm learning how to do this digital marketing thing. I've actually spent almost $1,000 on courses on doing that. My mommy blog, I'm trying to convert. It just, all of that stuff, it takes a lot of effort. And like I said, I've been blogging since my daughter's 30, since she was 8. Okay. So blogging and all of that stuff, you know, even to have a podcast or this radio program, I'm sure you understand that it takes effort and focus for it to be successful. And so the TBI is what keeps me from moving fast, you know, in anything I want to do, because I can wear myself out. You know, I have 5 spoons. And after this call, I'm probably going to sleep for 3 days because my brain is just using up a lot of energy.
Neurofatigue, it's a real thing.
Yes,
and people
exactly.
can't grasp
it
that.
Is.
It's incomprehensible to people who don't have brain trauma, how exhausting it is.
Right.
To, like you said earlier, to sit up, just to sit up. It takes an enormous amount of energy, and you're a great example that it can be done. If you have the tenacity and the willpower and the desire, you can make it happen. You're an excellent example.
You can do
Thank
it
you
and
so
still
much.
Have brain fatigue. Do all the stuff you want to do and still have your neuro fatigue and sleep it off. That's what I say. Don't surrender to it, okay?
All right. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for sharing with us what you have shared. So our listening audience, Jackie said she's putting herself out there. If you'd like to find her, visit Surviving Head Trauma page, and you'll probably see her in one of our posts. I see you quite frequently in the posts that we make every day. So hopefully
your page is very sweet.
Well, thank you. It's been an act of love for a long time. Mm-hmm. But we realize that we need other people, that we're not alone. Some people, like our earlier caller, Kate, is all alone in Montana. Mm-hmm. So some people are isolated, and they need something to feel a part of so that they feel alive again. So you certainly add life to
And I'm in the middle
of
Dallas, person. And I need you guys.
Oh.
You know? So whether you're living in a rural place or slap in the middle of some metropolitan area, this is a unique condition, like you said, and I have no hesitation explaining it to people. And then when I don't want to explain it, I don't. I just go find you guys, and I read what somebody else is going through, and I laugh when you post something funny. That's it.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you called tonight. Right. I'm so grateful, and thank you so much for your service to our country and all that you've been through to reach your level of accomplishment now. So thank you. Thank you so much for calling.
You're
and
welcome.
Keep in
thank
touch
you.
With us. Let us know how you're progressing.
Will do.
All right, Jackie.
So this isn't the end of the show, right? I'm going to stay on.
Yeah, we have another 25 minutes or so. We're on until midnight. So if we don't, there are a lot of people on the switchboard, but if I don't see any hands up, there's a little, actually literally an emoji of a hand being raised. If you press one, if you'd like to speak on air, press one. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'll read letters from our file, and we'll talk about the letters that are written to us.
Okay.
But we welcome you to join us. We're on air each month, fourth Thursday of each month.
Okay.
10 p.m. until midnight Eastern Standard Time. So if ever you'd like to join us in a conversation about anything you'd like to bring to the table, we're here. And actually, even if it's not my show, I host Surviving Head Trauma, but every night of the week there is a different brain trauma show on Brain Injury Radio Network. So you can always find a show each night of the week. All right? Okay. So again, we'll thank you and we'll say goodnight.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Jackie. Good night.
Night.
Well, we've gotten so much information. Jackie Rockwell in Dallas, Texas, a Navy veteran, who brought up a good point. And if Kate, if you're still listening or if you're tuning in to us later in an archived version, the VA is something I didn't think about when you said you were a veteran of the Air Force. I don't know why I did not. I, too, am a veteran, Marine Corps. And that fact, that's where my head trauma happened, at Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico, Virginia. 65-mile-an-hour truck flipped, rolling several times and killing a Marine and critically injuring two of us. And we survived but have lived for the last almost 40 years with this. So, Kate, Your VA is an excellent resource for help also. When we were talking earlier about your GoFundMe page, I don't know why I did not think of it then, but Jackie came to the rescue and helped us remember that. So yes, reach out to your VA and maybe the Social Security option is another means that you might find. So I will now give us a little break. Unless you'd like to speak on air, there are a lot of callers on the board here. So if you press one, I will skip the music break and we'll jump in, but no one's ready to go live again. So we will play one more song and then we'll go into letters that you've written to the show. We're going to try Rat Bat Blue, Meanwhile at Home on Surviving Head Trauma. I'm Terry Smith, your host. And this is Rat Bat Blue. Check him out on YouTube. check them out on YouTube. There's a message in that song. Meanwhile, at home, I'd change the world for you if I could. I think a lot of us feel that way when we look at our loved ones who are going through things that we wish we could change because we don't want to see them suffer, and ourselves even. We are like our last caller, Jackie, dealing with her own issues as well as her mother's issues. It can be overwhelming, quite a daunting experience, this reality of ours. And we've got a letter here, someone who can relate to that and is depressed by it. And she wants to know, Prerna, wants to know, how do you overcome depression from the past? So we put this out there and we accumulated quite a few replies, and one of them was to learn something new. That always helps because it diverts the mind to focus towards a different direction. Happiness or sadness is nothing but a state of mind. So finding a divergent, something to lead you away from your typical train of thought, to give you something new to focus on, is one of our replies. And another one from David says that looking ahead and knowing that a new day would be different and possibly much better. So basically, I think David is saying that we keep our hope alive, keeping the dream that we can overcome this issue of depression, because a lot of these life-changing traumatic experiences can leave a person void of hope and joy, and depression is what replaces it. So we find ways to deal with it that suits our life and our style of living. Joe says identifying the negative people in his life and distancing himself, and also change job. Excuse me. I'm trying to avoid a cold, so if I sound a little congested, it's because I am. But I listened to Brivana, who says, keeping busy, occupying your mind. Active is a good distraction. Walking, listening to upbeat music, removing negative things in your life as someone can bring you down. Replace those people. Focus on yourself and your children, if you have them. Positivity is definitely a good place to start. So that's nicely said, but I mean, it's often when we're in the depths of depression, it's hard to see life differently because it's where we're consumed by it. So finding another route of thought is not as easy as it sounds, but if you put your mind to it, you will find other things in life to think about. In fact, Sarah suggests gardening, planting beautiful flowers and tending them, talking to them and watching them grow and bloom. That's how she copes with her depression. And Minnie says that counseling, nature walks, sitting and listening to the ocean works for her. Maria says writing in her journal on what transpired that made her depressed so that she can reassess the situation, and doing something around the house, everything to keep her going until she drops tired and surrenders to slumber. So we're getting a consistent reaction here, keeping busy, doing something other than what you're doing to distract you from the mood that you're in, the overwhelming feeling of despair. Teresa, excuse me, says that the view and sounds of nature and good relaxing music worked for her. So there's another avenue, surrendering to nature. Nature, for me, my personal experience, that's one of my greatest joys, looking at this marvelous, beautiful creation that we live in, this planet, our ceiling, the sky, that's the oceans, the beautiful planet, this place. It's incredibly beautiful. Sometimes it just takes your breath away if you really just release your thoughts and just submit to the beauty of where we are on this planet, in the heavens. We're in heaven. Our planet is floating around in heaven. We're in space, not on a shelf, not on a ground, but literally floating in heaven. We are in heaven. What we make of this heaven is up to us. Heaven can have bad neighborhoods. Heaven isn't always the illusions painted by writers from ancient days, but heaven is a place right here, right now. We're floating in it, and it's up to us to decide if we want to live in a bad neighborhood or a good neighborhood, or where we want to digest our heavenly experience. And we can make it heaven or hell, depending upon our view and our submission to where we are. And when we see it as heaven, it becomes such. Katie says, kind of just have to retrain your brain and find things to do that bring you inner peace and happiness. Sometimes you have to let things and people go in order to find it, and that's okay. I agree with Katie. Sometimes a change of scenery will do us a world of good. And even if it's not a different location, sometimes just reanalyzing what we see. You look into the clouds, into the sky, you don't see just clouds anymore, but you see this miraculous, beautiful experience that we were gifted to have. It changes your perspective of where we are. And sometimes that in and of itself can give us a new perspective and gratitude, because oftentimes depression makes us so blinded to all the beautiful things that we do still have that we just become more absorbed in the depression. But if for a moment we can just step back and assess the beauty that we still have that remains and reevaluate our view, can make a world of difference, a life-changing difference. Miriam says, life is too short, have decided to be happy. She started her journey of losing weight and found great joy in new possibilities. So maybe exercise, that's a good point. Exercising and going out into nature, getting a grip on life that is still abundant. No matter how depressed we are, there is still good when we open our eyes wide enough to see it. Kimberly says, practicing meditation or practicing gratitude. Ah, we just said that, gratitude. Being patient with herself during the process, because you don't just meditate. It takes a lot of patience with yourself and practice. And sometimes being grateful isn't always easy if you have a heavy load. No doubt, Kimberly, it's not as easy as it sounds. It takes a mindset that has overcome tremendous odds to really appreciate, reevaluate, and assess something different than what we have. It can happen. It takes time. It takes practice. But once you get down that road, start the path, it becomes less burdensome and easier. So it's a matter of perspective. Our own mindset can start us in a new direction. Janine says, I cried and prayed. I meditated and relocated. And even though the pain is still there, it's not as heavy and bitter as it used to be, taking one day at a time. And ultimately, that's all we can do. Life affords us the gift of life, and that's it. What we do with that gift is our mindset and perspective. And one day at a time. We don't move a mountain in one day. You don't eat an elephant in one bite. It's one nibble at a time, one little bite and more until it's consumed. The same with life. It's one day at a time, and we take it as it comes. We deal with it the best we can on a level. In fact, Jackie, our last caller, said something about she's eating clean, but every now and then a Reese's peanut butter cup or two or three or four or however many it takes to get that urge filled. But then you go back to the clean eating. So sometimes we take little directions that off course to get back on course. So whatever works for you is what it takes. And it's going to be different for each person because we're all unique individuals with different backgrounds and aspirations for the future. So it's really a matter of being willing to step aside from the depression and step aside from what's making you feel depressed and looking at the bigger picture of life itself, the bigger, grander scale, the bigger, grander picture, if you will. And Eileen says praying works for her. Prayer is the most important tool for depression, she finds, and having faith that all things will get better. So if that works for you, then use it. Because like I said, each of us will have a different vehicle to use to facilitate our views and changing our views and mindset. So if prayer works for you, then that's what you do. Meditation, mind control, mindset. So we live with the anticipation of it being better. We feel depressed, but we know that it can be better. And when we realize that and accept that, we tend to find ways we have not tried. Something new will pop up. Someone will say something and trigger something in us that will give us a different perspective and help us see things a little differently if we take life one day at a time. Not rushing it, not forcing it, but being open-minded to change our perspective, to look at the bigger picture. And we talk with, I think that's it for our letters on that topic, depression. So we will move to another folder. We've 5 minutes left on air, so we don't want to get too caught up in a long discussion. But what I'm seeing mostly here, there's so many folders on my desktop from people talking about tinnitus. That seems to be the most overwhelming outreach here tonight, from the letters that we've received anyway. Let's jump into one. Here's a wife asking for help with her husband's tinnitus. Julie, she says, "Hello, my husband has acute onset extreme tinnitus." That's the loud siren in your head, and it never goes away. It's a nonstop sound. It's so incredibly loud that nothing overwhelms it. No concert experience or anywhere sound is louder than we can hear ourselves talk can drown that tinnitus sound out of the head because it's internalized. So no matter how loud the speakers are at a concert, you can still hear that siren. No matter what you do, the only relief from it is sleep. When you're asleep, you don't hear it because you're not conscious of what's going on inside your head. But Julie says her husband has onset of extreme tinnitus, and he went from jogging every morning and teaching a full day of high school and riding his bike in the evening to being completely unable to sleep and almost in a sheer panic most of the time. The doctor gave him Ambien to sleep, but it's not helping. He said, "It's so loud that he can't think. We've tried everything. He's getting sick and from not sleeping, feverish, and she takes him to a specialist in LA soon, but she's terrified for him. She says, I have a serious autoimmune disorder, and he does a lot of the care for our daughter. Is this a permanent state of affairs? I'm so lost. Any advice, shared experiences, appreciated." Well, Julie, I tell you, there's no known cure for it. What happens in the inner ear is that the inner ear hairs are damaged. And once they're destroyed, that's it. The sound is there for life. Death is the only solution. So when you read articles about, we have a cure for your tinnitus, be careful spending your money on that, because they're not going to restore the hairs that have been damaged. Once they're dead, it's like amputating your arm and then saying, or someone telling you, well, I can sell you a product that can restore your arm, grow your arm back. Be careful, because it's probably not a legitimate sale, because you don't get rid of tinnitus. You don't grow back hairs in the inner ear that have been destroyed. So there's very little comfort in giving you hope for a cure, because there isn't one. It's something you deal with. You learn to live with it, despite the unending siren. When I had my brain trauma almost 40 years ago, it started and I thought, this is hard. How am I supposed to live for the rest of my life like this? And I thought, I've reached rock bottom in life. It can't get worse. But I learned that there is a trap door. That trap door at the bottom of rock bottom was my heartbeat. The heartbeat echoes in my ear loudly as the tinnitus. So the bump, 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 and the combined is like an orchestra in the head. So with 1 minute left on the show, we won't go into all of the responses to let me go back to the page here with her name, to Julie's husband's issues. But Julie, we support you and we understand what you're going through, because many of us with head trauma were left with tinnitus, seizures, all the list goes on and on. As many of you know, there's not a short list. So we wish you the best, and maybe next month we'll continue from this point. With that said, we will thank you for joining us, whether you're listening to us live tonight or after the show in an archived podcast. We thank you for joining us. We wish you love. We wish you peace, and most of all, hope, because with hope, all things remain possible. 10 seconds left. Kate and Jackie, thank you for calling the show tonight. And we appreciate the abundance of information you shared with us and giving us something to understand. We appreciate you. And we'd like to thank Craig Cecilia and Kim Justice, the network's owner and managers. And we'd like to remind you that Surviving Head Trauma is a page on Facebook. You can visit it daily for information and uplifting motivation. It's also a book. You can find the book Surviving Head Trauma anywhere books are sold. And you can listen to all the archived podcasts from this show on my website, terrysmithbooks.com, terrysmithbooks.com. With that, we're going to say goodnight. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the air next month, fourth Thursday of each month, 10 p.m. until midnight, Eastern Standard Time. With that, we're going to end the episode and say goodnight. Good night.